Steve Murray, how you doing, my friend?
I'm good, brother. How are you? Long time.
Appreciate you coming on here, giving us your expertise and your attitude against all the dumb shit out there in the world. A few things I want to talk to you about today, but number one being elections, midterms in a month. You're on the ground there in Arizona, so you have eyes and ears in one of the battleground states, sort of ground zero for election fraud in this country, one of the ground zeros. So what are you seeing? Let's start locally and in the state of Arizona, then maybe we can bring it up to national, federal elections. But what's happening there in Arizona?
There's a lot going on here. So let's back up. So the last time we talked, it was before the August 2nd election. So I've spent the better part of the summer pushing three things. Number one, go to the ballot box, go to the ballot, the polling stations in person, take your mail-in ballot, don't use ballot drop boxes, don't mail in your ballot. And it turned into a 28% turnout, the largest primary turnout in Arizona. So we had some success there. I'm working.
Let me stop you for a sec. 28%, but largest primary turnout in something seems wrong there. Seems like we should still be getting a lot more than 28%.
Well, you got to remember it's a primary. So people typically vote in the general. They don't typically vote in primaries.
Yeah.
This time we were able to mobilize a lot more people because people are starting to pay attention because they're seeing, you know, the slide of the country. They're seeing all these policies that are, let's just say, slanted towards taking away our rights. So people started turning out. There was a pretty good turnout. As far as the mail-in ballots and drop boxes, regardless of that, but 28% showing up on election day is unheard of for a primary, especially here. It was the largest turnout ever in Arizona for a primary.
Did it surprise you when Carrie Lake won?
No, because she was polling high. She was double digits higher than Karen Robeson.
Yeah.
So I wasn't surprised at all. What I was surprised at is that they cheated as much as they did. So we figured out that they threw a 4 to 8% buffer in the machines. They used a 4% buffer when it came to the paper ballots. What sent us over the top and what put Kerry over the top was certain counties refused to release their vote counts and their vote tallies on election night until Maricopa County reported, because they hinged on Maricopa County and they were anticipating all the other precincts would report, and then they could add what they needed and send Robeson over the top. And because they held off for 2 days, 2.5 days, they couldn't obfuscate it anymore. And the pressure was mounting on them. So that's why she won. And if we really did a paper ballot count and drove a paper ballot count, we would see that the machines were off by about 8% at least. And what's transpired since the August 2nd election is that there's a grassroots movement in Cochise County now to where if there's a variance larger than 2% between the machines and the paper ballots, that it automatically drives a paper recount of all the ballots, and it's gaining momentum. So I've been working with several senators here, and I'm actually trying to get Mark Fincham to come on the situation report and talk about his run for Secretary of State and get him some press. I did several interviews with Kathleen Wynne. I'm working with Carrie Lake's people. So there's a lot going on. And what we're really trying to drive is a move away from Dominion systems. That's why Mark Fincham needs to be voted into office.
Absolutely.
Because he'll make sure that Dominion goes away as Secretary of State. And the elite here are deathly afraid of Mark Fincham getting in as Secretary of State because they know that change will happen.
Yeah, keep going.
The other interesting thing that's happened over the last 6 months is I've pivoted away of going after the shills and focusing on disinformation, and focused almost all my energy for the last 6 months on the election, because people are just blissfully unaware of how the process works, how the politics work, how the political establishment works. And I'll give you a case in point. In Congressional District 6, you have three major counties. You got Pinal County, you got Pima County, you got Cochise County. And Kathleen Wynne was running in that county, and she had some pretty stiff competition. Sisamani was Pence's pick, Robeson's pick, and the establishment's pick. And it just so happened that Sisamani's district was the one where they sent out all the wrong ballots, 69,000 to be exact. And Wynn filed a court case. The court case was settled out of court. And the plan was they were going to do city and state ballots and then federal ballots. And because of that, I don't think the voters were educated on the fact they had two ballots to vote off of. So the numbers were skewed in both counties. And then on top of that, there's this wrestling going on for CD6 and CD7. Why? Because Mesa Gateway is in one of those districts. Now, Mesa Gateway, if you don't know what Mesa Gateway is, Mesa Gateway is a port of entry that Ducey and Cruz set up an agreement with the Mexican government where they would clear all customs in Mexico before it came to Mesa Gateway. So basically, the cartels fly stuff right into Mesa Gateway. It's put on a truck and away it goes. Could be drugs, human trafficking, you name it. So they're all the elite are trying to maintain control of Mesa Gateway in that area. So that was where a predominant number of the fraud occurred, was in Pinal County. And there was other issues. They ran out of ballots, et cetera, a number of excuses. But the reason we were successful is because we took away two of the three mechanisms that they used in 2020 to steal the election. We had people watching the drop boxes. We had people in the tally centers that were watching the tally. We had people that were watching the video cameras in the tabulation rooms, as well as people in the tabulation rooms. And we overwhelmed the place with observers, as well as I told pretty much everybody that I could think of across the state, do not use Sharpies. Take a ballpoint pen with you when you go to the polling station. Use your ballpoint pen, hand them your ballot, watch them tabulate your ballot, and then leave. And if you take a mail-in ballot, take your mail-in ballot, watch them sour the ballot, right? So I beat that drum for about 4 or 5 months. And a funny thing happened right around the middle of July. I started getting calls from political candidates. I started getting calls from political parties. I started getting calls from the establishment. And I can tell you that Kelly Townsend did not make it through this election directly because of me and my messaging, as well as the things that I put on the channel about her. And all of it tied back to the IGAs. You and I have talked about IGAs before, so you know what those are. Your audience may not know, but all the counties here in Arizona have signed agreements with the CDC, and they're intergovernmental agreements that essentially give over control of the county to the CDC during some kind of a pandemic. We highlighted that in early 21, and we beat the drum 21 and 22. And now it's actually starting to get traction. And part of that was the last 4 months, we really pushed the issue that Townsend and a number of others that were up for re-election, Walt Blackman's another one, were not doing anything to get rid of those IGAs. And because of that, the voters looked at that and went, yep, these guys got to go. Now, we picked up Eli Crane up in Walt Blackman's district, which, you know, I don't know if he's another Dan Crenshaw or not, but there's a lot of things going on here. And the good thing is there's a lot of momentum and there's a lot of people paying attention now. So there's a lot of grassroots movements that are working on building observers and observer corps for all these drop boxes and all the mail-in ballot drop boxes. So we're gaining momentum. Nationwide, it's a toss-up in Georgia. We have a lot of momentum as far as the red wave. But what I see playing out is you're going to see Democrats steal in probably Wisconsin, Michigan, and in Georgia. You'll see Texas will be a very interesting race to see how that goes. He's down at least 10 points in the polls, but you never know. He may come out of the shadows and they may cheat there. They don't have Dominion systems there, so I think that's going to be a pretty close count. It'll be very interesting to see how Texas goes. I think we're going to see probably 10 to 12 seats picked up in the Senate for the GOP. I think we'll see more like 50 or 60 in the House, and they'll take the majority back. But something I caution people on is just because the Republicans take back the House and the Senate, it doesn't mean they're going to be any better than the Democrats. These are all the same people that voted for 87,000 IRS agents. People cannot forget that. And Mitch McConnell has been running around for the last 3 months promoting and pushing all of these establishment picks for the GOP. And he's been successful in three states. So I would not be surprised if they stack the deck there too, and we see some legislation that people don't want to see. So,
yeah, these are just Republicrats we're dealing with. Republicrats.
It's a uniparty, right?
Yeah, the uniparty. And more and more people are realizing, but the mass needs to, that these labels just divide us and box us in and keep us in these nice little controllable groups. So, you know, we have to really look at somebody's substance, their values, who they are, if they walk the walk and talk the talk. When I was there in Phoenix at the Pit last month, I did get to listen to Eli Crane. He was there, former Navy SEAL, and he sounded all right. I'm not familiar with who he is and never heard of him before that event, but he seemed all right. So I do hope that, you know, he is who he says he is and can make some change happen there in Arizona. And it's such a, God, it's such a pain in the ass how complicated this electoral system is when it should be so easy. Cast your ballot, should be safe and secure. One vote, one person. Got to make sure you're an actual citizen, though, and then, you know, spit out the number at the end. But yeah, it's just, and it's purposely complicated. It's purposefully this complicated so they can get their, you know, get their fake votes.
I think that's the thing I've been schooled on the most in Arizona is the elite here have controlled all the seats in this state since McCain took office. And he's stacked the deck with people that are loyal to him. And then you have a group of people that, and most of them are geriatrics, right? So you have a bunch of really old people that are running the political program here, and they have no idea about technology. They know even less about the way things are moving as far as information goes. And we find ourselves trying to fight the system internally as much as we're fighting the Democrats. And I don't believe in the two-party system anyway. I think there needs to be multiple parties. I think there needs to be multiple candidates.
Can we just let people run without a party? Is that even possible? Or do you have to have a little letter next to your name when you run?
You can do it in a write-in ballot, but to get enough momentum to get people to write it in would be a monumental undertaking. So, and it's architected this way for a reason, so they can maintain control.
Exactly.
What I think you're going to see is, I think you're going to see a transition in the Senate. Does that mean Trump's coming back? No, I don't think Trump's ever coming back. And I say that because there's too many wheels in motion right now across the planet that are going to occur before 24.
Y'all get triggered in the comments and tap, tap, tap. This is just one man's opinion, FYI.
Well, I'm not talking about Trump not coming back because the public doesn't want him. I'm talking about the fact that you have the central bank digital currency that they're trying to roll out, the digital dollar. You're seeing a number of different initiatives across the government to roll out.
You're just looking at the big picture from your angle and.
Yeah. And it's so I think this election is going to be a very big determinant of whether or not we go down the social scoring route and the digital currency route. They're going to keep pressing with their agenda to try and get us on that. And if they're successful, then I don't know how Trump will come back, because I'll put it this way. The best quote I've heard about this digital currency is, it doesn't matter who wins on the ballot. It just doesn't matter, because the banks will control the levers of control for your life. And if they don't like what you're doing, they turn you off like they do in China. That's why I'm saying that Trump may not come back, because they're trying desperately to implement this social scoring system. You already see an ESG rollout across the country through businesses, and they're using businesses to legislate now.
ESG is environmental,
social, and governance.
It's basically like a social credit score for businesses.
It's just
more or less.
It's an arbitrary score that the banks, Goldman Sachs, came up with.
It's a woke score.
Yes, to basically score. We used to be ESGR. It used to be environmental, social, governance, and regulatory, because they thought they were going to control the regulatory too. But what they figured out is, if you look at Sri Lanka, they have no gas, they have no food, they have no logistics. They have a ESG score of 98. So that should tell you that if they have their way, as you know, 100% carbon, zero carbon emissions means no humans. That's what they're angling towards. This ESG score, though, is just fictitious. And it all ties into the central bank digital currency. And people are not talking about it because they don't understand it. Mm-hmm. And this digital, think about it this way. If we implement a central bank digital currency here, we basically hand our sovereignty off to a bunch of bureaucrats in Europe, and they control the planet. And they're all tied to China. So China controls the planet through a social scoring system. That's why I say after this election, this is a referendum on what kind of a country we want to be.
And we're already tracked enough as it is with our lives on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. If every single purchase and every single movement and post we make and thought in our freaking heads goes into some mainframe, and they're able to give you a D minus if you're not good enough of a citizen, or, oh, you posted this on social media,
yeah,
you can't buy this at the store.
It's even more insidious than that, because Bill Barr was working on a program while he was still in DOJ to predict, use personality profiles to predict who was going to commit crimes.
Minority Report.
They're trying to bring the Minority Report. They're trying to bring that alive. China's done something similar with their social scoring system. Literally, they scrape all your social media, all your transactions, all your movement. And if they see one thing that shows up as a red flag, they shut you off.
It's what we call full spectrum dominance. And that's what our societal overlords want.
Yeah. So that's why I say Trump's probably not going to come back if people don't show up and vote. And they need to take this seriously, because this, we're not going to just vote our way out of this. This is just the first step to reclaiming the republic. The next step after that is to drive these new politicians to actually repeal some of the laws they passed, number one. And then number two, disband the FBI, disband the ATF, disband the DHS, get rid of DNI, and do some real real structural changes in the federal government so that they don't have the power they have now.
So if we disbanded those agencies, though, how do you see the framework being made? Would marshals or sheriffs take over a lot of the work that the FBI is doing? Would the DIA take over a lot of work that, how would you see it forming if the FBI and
you have to restructure those organizations. So you have to completely tear them apart and start over. The way I see it going is you disband them and then you rebuild them slowly but surely, and you give them very specific missions to do. And you do not let them go outside those missions. The reason why the FBI is so corrupt is because over time they've been used as the law enforcement branch for whichever party was dominant.
Just the Gestapo,
And it started under Hoover, right? So J. Edgar Hoover, he had his own profiles on politicians. He had his own profiles on people. They've taken that now, and the Senate's doing the same thing to everybody else, but they've also rolled in the intelligence agencies as well as the ATF, as well as DHS. Those organizations need to be disbanded and rebuilt from the ground up. And I mean rebuilt. And DHS was started after 9/11, just like DNI was started after 9/11. They're redundant organizations. They don't really serve a purpose other than to create more bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. The Department of the Coast Guard's always been sitting out there under Department of Transportation because they're not quote unquote combat facing. Since they've been rolled under DHS, they become combat facing. They have a combat facing mission. They share intelligence with all the other branches of the intelligence community. So we've seen a fusion of a lot of these different non-law enforcement capabilities become law enforcement. And we literally have to structurally rebuild every single institution in our government. At the same time, we have to get China out of our country. We have to get the communist faction out of our government because they've infiltrated every part of the government. In fact, I was reading something this morning that said Joe Biden's entire staff is being run by Obama, who's being run by China and people in Europe, which I don't know if that's true or not, but it sure is plausible, especially when you start looking at some of the things that they're doing overseas right now.
Right. Yeah. And one of the big bombshell stories that came out at the end of last week was how China has 30 plus police stations in 20 countries around the world devoted to tracking Chinese nationals in that country, i.e. probably Chinese nationals, a part of the Thousand Talents program who are spies. So
that is called a counterintelligence or an intelligence operation is what that's called. And when I first read about it, they were only talking about a precinct in Canada, but evidently there's a list of addresses all over the planet that they've created. And we've done the same thing with CIA, and we've done the same thing with FBI. So when I first read it, I was incensed. But when I took a step back and started thinking about what the broader purpose was, then I realized, yeah, these are intelligence, counterintelligence operations that the Chinese are running. We should expect that to happen. But now we need to throw them out.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So
nationalize every bit of property they purchased in this country and throw them out. Mm-hmm. But nobody, and this is how you do it. All of their families, for the most of the Communist Party leadership, their families are here. They've moved them here for a better quality of life. So if you want to get control of China, you go roll up all their families, and you give Xi an ultimatum. You want your families back, then you get out of our country and you don't come back. And oh, by the way, we're nationalizing every bit of property that you purchased, including all of the food production and energy production businesses that you guys have infiltrated. We're taking all that back too. And then throw them out. That's what we need to do.
Yeah, return to sender.
Yeah.
How about Russia? You know, we got that big situation going on with the Nord Stream. Looks like an obvious false flag pipeline blow up over there. So who done it, in your opinion? And
We absolutely did. We told everybody we were going to do it, and then we did it. And then we told everybody Putin did it. Look, Putin doesn't have any financial incentive to blow his own stuff up. I mean, he's not a dumb guy, right? He's not that stupid to blow up his own pipeline and then try and blame the US. He has no incentive to do that. All he has to do is wait us out and wait out Europe. He can starve Europe out. He's already done it once, turned off the gas. All he has to do is keep the gas off for an extended period of time. And guess what? Destabilization done. He doesn't have to do that. But now that we've committed an act of war and we've helped the Ukrainian forces by launching missiles out of Poland, from what I understand, it's just a matter of time before he responds. And I think what we're going to see is not the collapse of the Russian army as the administration or the regime wants us to believe. I think Putin's going to send a message. I think he's going to resolve the Ukrainian conflict in a way that's not going to be favorable to the US or to Europe. And I think it's going to shock the world when he does that, because he has shown a tremendous amount of restraint, which is not Russian doctrine and it's not Russian philosophy. They usually use a scorched earth totalitarian war stance. I mean, they literally go scorched earth. They don't screw around. And he sent in just enough troops to do the mission that he stated, which was to denazify, whatever that means, and then take the ethnic Russian regions and control those regions. And he's done that, especially with his referendums. So my guess is he's planning for a response action, and his response action is going to be swift and decisive. And I think it's going to crush what's left of the Ukrainian army. Despite what they're telling you in TV, there's been an unusual amount of casualties on the Ukrainian side. And Colonel McGregor, who's been on Fox News, he's been on a number of different podcasts and talk shows. He is spot on with everything he's saying. He is well-read in Russian doctrine. He's well-read in the politics of the region. He understands the ethnic politics there.
What was his name? Say it one more time.
Colonel McGregor.
Colonel McGregor. Gotcha.
Yeah. I'll send you a link to his last interview. It was actually very, very well done. He has a very, very good view of the world, but I agree with his assessment. I will tell you this. When the Russians moved into Ukraine in February, it caught everybody by surprise, except for those who were planning on the worst case scenario. I thought it was posturing, as did a lot of my friends. And when he finally moved in, there was no warnings, indications of when he was going to move. So everybody assumed, okay, he's going to posture. He's going to rattle his cage. He's going to ask for money. Didn't do that. And he didn't do that. And he didn't release any comms, because he confiscated and they were moving any digital equipment that could be intercepted. They moved it off the battlefield before they even stepped off the line of departure. And let me tell you, that was a brilliant move on his part, because he caught the Ukrainians flat-footed. He caught us flat-footed. And more importantly, he's trying to negotiate right now. He's literally trying to negotiate. We're the ones that won't negotiate with him. So that should tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah, Zelensky seems to be trying to cry his way into NATO and ask for as much money as he can. He prefers getting the billions of bucks from the U.S. over ending the war and making a deal with Putin.
Well, the thing that people need to keep in mind is that we were encroaching on Russian territory. After the wall came down in the 90s, we literally signed a treaty that said NATO will not march any farther east. And we signed agreements.
But what happened?
Well, that's exactly what we did. We started marching east. The Bushes started marching into Poland, putting missiles into Poland. And Obama was in Ukraine. They conducted the overthrow of the government or the coup in Ukraine in 14. And they didn't give Putin much of a choice. And, you know, the other part of the equation that people aren't really paying attention to is that the Poles, Ukrainians, and Russians, they have been fighting over that dirt for the better part of 1,000 years. They are not going to stop because we're there or because there's lines in the ground. Look at Azerbaijan or Armenia. I mean, there's histories replete with, you know, genocide after genocide after conflict after conflict. And that's a factor here too. And just the geopolitical side of this is complex enough. When you add in that we were managing former Russian and Soviet biolabs and chemical weapon plants under Defense Threat Reduction Agency, that's a recipe for a nuclear war. And that's literally what Putin is trying to avoid, but we're not giving him any choice.
Right.
And then today I saw in the Huffington Post, would nuclear war be good for our environment? Literally, they're trying to message that they want a nuclear conflict or some kind of a limited nuclear.
Well, this is the what post?
Huffington Post.
God.
And it was Washington Post. The
gaslighting is getting worse, just worse and worse. The other day, the Washington Post said 7 reasons this recession could be good for your wallet.
Yeah, they're trying this goes back to what I was talking about with Trump. What they're trying to do, they want to take the election. They want to crash the economy. They want to usher in this digital currency.
They're trying to make World War III happen.
Well, what will happen prior to World War III is they want a civil war here. And who benefits by the U.S. being destabilized? China. Who benefits from a war in Russia? China. Who benefits from destabilization in Europe? Russia and China. So you have the recipe for some kind of conflict coming, and what it looks like, who knows? How it starts, who knows? But they have to do something because they're running out of options. And like I said, all Putin had to do is wait. He'd wait us out and our economy collapses. We can't do anything. Can't move forces, can't feed forces, can't buy new equipment. And he knows that. So he's playing the long game, which I think is the smartest move. The question is, are we going to drive him into action, or is China going to manipulate us to drive him into action? There's a lot of complexities here, and you can't simplify this situation as a cabal or, you know, some kind of a satanic cult. There's a lot of players involved in this. There's a lot of marriages of convenience, and this is a very, very dangerous situation, not just for us, but for Europe. And if we blew up that pipeline, we screwed the Germans for decades. I mean, decades, we screwed them over. So I'm curious to see what the German government's going to do. And, you know, none of these dullards that are in Washington, D.C., that are running policy, truly understand the downstream second and third order effects of the decisions they're making, because some of the decisions they've already made are going to take us generations to unwind. And that is if we can come out of this without going kinetic. And that's the biggest concern that we have right now. That's why I keep saying everybody needs to show up and exercise and be a part of the process. Because if you don't have any reason to bitch, because you have an opportunity to go influence change at the local level by exercising your right to vote. Get away from the machines. Get away from all the BS. If you show up in person, they'll overwhelm the machines and you'll see a good result. But if you sit at home, we'll be a communist country. That's how this is going to go.
Yep. These next few months are going to be very interesting. And it is imperative that we all get active and just do something to force change to happen. Hey, I wanted to get into one last subject, being all the freaking shills and clickbait in this movement. But I think we've been going on long enough in this one. We'll save that. that triggering, that fun old topic for for another episode, maybe in a week or so. But you kind of answered my question there at the end. I was going to ask you, you know, we've got 1 month left towards before midterms, and what can people do? But sound like you gave that good old whip in the ass.
They got to get involved, be a poll watcher, be a precinct member, even because I have a big audience of Washington State, and I routinely get asked, well, what about Washington? Well, Washington's not completely a captured exercise or a captured operation. It is, there's still the ability to influence change. And if you can be a part of the process, be a part of the process. And the more that show up, and the more that are part of the process, especially as poll watchers and observers, the less likely they are to win. So that's the biggest thing I can say to everybody.
Right. When people think of states like Washington or even Colorado or Oregon, I mean, these states, people might think they're lost causes, but these are the kind of states where you just have one blue city that controls a big state that has a shitload of red in it. So there's a lot of hope, I think, in these states like Washington and Colorado. California, probably not. New York, nah. But some of these bluer states, there's a lot of conservative leaning folk. There's a lot of people who are absolutely sick of the system. And I remember before the 2020 election, Seattle was breaking records in fundraising for Trump. Seattle was. So there's still some hope in a lot of these blue areas. There definitely is. But
you have to remember that there's a lot of very, very rich people that were Democrats when Biden took office that are now they're now conservatives.
Yeah.
Because they've seen the damage that this guy has done to this country. And
their 401ks are,
it's more than that. When you take a step back from the politics and you see the ground truth of what they're really trying to do to the country, a lot of these people are going to vote for maintaining their way of life. And if they can do it peacefully, they're going to do it peacefully. You're already seeing droves of people leaving the Democratic Party. In fact, Trump was alluding to about a week ago that Kristen Sinema from Arizona is going to flip and be a conservative because she's one of the most quote unquote conservative in the progressive liberal party right now. And I'm curious to see if that's actually going to happen, because if it does happen, that's going to be a tectonic shift in the Democratic Party. And I think we have to keep the pressure on them so that the party collapses and the whole progressive liberal, you know, grooming of children and the outward sexualization of schools, sexualization of all of our media, as well as Hollywood, that has to stop. And there's a lot of very rich people that are starting to see the light on that because they have kids too. They have kids that are going to school. They're paying for private schools that are insufferably woke. And I had a conversation, it's been a couple of weeks now with one of the very, let's just say, some old money here in Arizona. And it was an interesting conversation from the standpoint that the first question they asked me is, what the hell is going on? And when I laid it out for them, they're like, we had no idea. I'm like, because you're not paying attention. But if you pay attention, you can see that all this COVID stuff, they laid the groundwork for COVID years ago. This is just the exercise and the operation. And now they're on the other side of it. And the whole intent of COVID from the beginning was to roll out a social scoring system across the planet that was tied to these vaccine passports. And since they couldn't do that, now they're punting and they're moving on to something else. And they're trying to get this digital currency in place. That shook these guys up to the point where they literally were white-faced. And I said, you guys have to be a part of the process. You need to start putting money and injecting money into the process and get conservatives that are loyal to the Constitution back in office so we can retake the republic. Otherwise, we're going to be a communist country. And I don't know about you, but I didn't serve 23 plus years in the military to watch our country go communist. And I did an interview with Kash Patel about a week and a half ago. And I said to him in the interview, you can tell 45 that I will volunteer for the mission to arrest these people and take them to Gitmo. And before the show, we were talking about, he asked me, we briefly were talking about the situation. And I asked him, you know, are you going to go back and be the SecDef? And he said, no, but we already have the cadre of people picked out for the cabinet. So Trump's been doing some planning, and he's got the right people, because I think he realized that he was surrounded by swamp creatures. And this time around, I think he's going to surround himself with people that are loyal to the Constitution and will affect change. And
let's hope so, man.
I'm hoping that we can keep this non-kinetic and non-digital currency until 24, so we could turn the corner. But the cards are stacked against us, and people need to be actively participating, man. That's the only way this is going to work. Otherwise, this will go kinetic. And the danger in that is our cities turn into Aleppo, and everything stops. If this goes kinetic, everything stops the moment the first bullets fly. And people need to realize that's not the answer. If we can avoid that at all costs, that's not the answer, because it makes us ripe for other types of infiltration and other types of interdiction by China, Russia, and especially Iran, that will derail not only our country, but derail rebuilding anything for decades. And they would love to see us get into some kind of a kinetic civil war. That's why it's very important for people to just check in, be a part of the process, and see where the chips land. And then if we have to pick up arms, great. We'll do that afterwards. But you can't
do no harm, but take no shit.
Yeah.
All right, absolutely. Steve. Appreciate you for coming on.
Yep, brother. I'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Thank you for taking time here, and we'll do this again soon. Yep.
Yep. Take care, bud.
See ya.